This is number 4. We are presently considering what perhaps could be called management communication. We're looking particularly at the individual manager and how the individual manager or administrator can be an effective communicator. And of course, in being an effective communicator, this means that he is able to share with understanding ideas, concepts, plans, and programs in such a way that other members of his team are able to get on board and able to be a part of what needs to be accomplished for the successful organization, administration, operation, and ultimate fulfillment of the goals for which the organization exists. In a few moments, we're going to talk about organizational communication, but just a few more comments in relation to the manager as a communicator. Dr. Paul A. Argenti, in his book, The Fast Forward MBA Pocket Reference, wrote this: "Defined in its broadest sense as the exchange of thoughts, messages, or information, as by speech, signals, writing, or behavior, communication, more than any other subject in business, has implications for everyone in the organization, from the newest mailroom clerk to the CEO. We all have to communicate, no matter what our role, and as a result, the subject, that is the subject of communication, is often taken for granted." Given the broad nature of the topic, we must narrow our focus. We're zeroing in on those aspects of communication in organizational life that will allow the manager and the administrator to be successful. Dr. Argenti continued in his writing. He said the field of management communication is one of the more recent additions to the business school curriculum. Most graduate business schools added such courses to their roster in response to requests from the business and academic community for better written and oral skills from their graduates. Although all college and even high school graduates receive some formal instruction in writing, this instruction tends to focus on basic skills. Skills such as grammar, spelling, usage, and so forth, rather than focusing on communication strategy or issues of communication within an organizational structure. These are critical within a successful managerial career. Few graduates receive any training prior to graduate school in the art of oral presentation. Thus, the first management communication courses, we find these at Harvard Business School and Dartmouth's Tuck School. These were pioneers in this effort. These programs tended to focus on developing writing and speaking skills that would help students prepare themselves for managerial careers. Today, virtually all graduate schools teach a combination of management communication, which includes communication strategy, managerial writing, oral presentation, cross-cultural communication, as well as corporate communication. Most managers have learned to think strategically about their organization overall, but few think strategically about what they spend really most of their time doing, that is, communicating. In fact, several studies have shown that CEOs spend as much as 85% of their time doing this one important thing, communicating. Management communication expert Mary Munter writes in her Guide to Managerial Communication that managerial communication is successful only if you get the desired results from your audience. To get that response, you have to think strategically about your communication before you start to write or speak. In addition, a more strategic focus on communication allows managers to determine their communicator strategies, also to analyze their audience, as well as to determine whether their message should be a direct message or an indirect message. It also allows the manager to choose the appropriate communication channels. Managers who set objectives before communicating will be more efficient and more effective. Setting objectives in this context means putting yourself in the shoes of your audience and determining their response. In other words, as a result of this communication, my audience will, and the effective manager, before the communication process begins, will seek an answer to that very important question. For example, instead of saying that you want to write a memo requesting funding for a business trip to meet with the sales force, you would set your communication objective as follows. As a result of reading this memo, my boss will agree that I need to travel to meet with the sales force. This subtle shift makes all the difference in how you organize your message, what tone you're going to use, and certainly the kind of information that you're going to include. In addition, the communicator must think about what communication style to use. Tannenbaum and Smith wrote about communication style in a landmark Harvard Business Review article. Their approach breaks down style into four categories. These categories are, number one, tell. Number two, sell. Number three, consult. And number four, join. If you want simply to instruct or explain something, that is, use this exit in an emergency, you would use a tell style of communication. If, instead, you want to persuade your audience to do something, as in the request which we mentioned a moment ago for funding to go meet the business or to meet the sales force, here you would use a selling style. If you need to confer with your audience and you need more information from them, as in a question and answer session after a presentation, you would certainly use the consult style. And if you need collaboration, as in preparing for a meeting, you certainly would use the joint style of communication. Finally, the communicator must also think about what kind of credibility he or she has with the audience. This can be based on rank, goodwill, expertise, image, or perhaps even shared values. Communicating strategically means thinking about what kind of credibility that you have going into the communication and what you might do to acquire such credibility over time. To get back to our earlier example, if the communicator has asked for traveling funding several times over the past year and accomplish little as a result, chances are that the boss will not grant the request because the communicator has lost goodwill credibility. In addition to thinking about the objectives for a given communication, you need to determine who the audience should be, what the audience members know about you and the topic, how they feel about it, and what sorts of appeals might work best. When you communicate with someone, you are, in essence, also communicating with all of the people that person communicates with as well. Many managers do not think about this beforehand. Thus, the secondary, or sometimes referred to as the hidden audience, is as important to think about when communicating in an organization as the primary audience. If, for example, you're sending a message about employee benefits to the person who works for you, you must also think about the needs of that person's family, who will be part of the audience for that communication. One of the great difficulties in management communication is that the same message may appeal to some members of your audience, but not to others. This may require that you tailor your message for different audience members, depending, of course, upon their needs. For example, what is in the company's best interest may not be so good for its employees and families. As important as analyzing the audience is, analyzing its knowledge base is extremely important as well. How much do the audience members know about the topic you're discussing? Well, if they know very little, you have to include more background information. If they know a lot, you need to come up with a new approach to the topic. And then in a similar way, what does your audience know about you? If they do not know very much about you, if they don't know you very well, chances are that your credibility will be lower, certainly making it harder for you to reach your objective. This may mean that you need to build up your credibility at the same time that you're covering the main topic. Their feelings about the topic are also an important part of this analysis. If an audience is positively disposed toward your topic, then it will be more inclined to agree with you. If the audience is negative, then you have more work to do in reaching your objective, and you have to use more of the sales mode that we mentioned a few moments ago. Once you've determined your objectives as a communicator, and then you've analyzed your audience, you must also think about how you want to organize your message for communication. As writing expert Barbara Minto has pointed out, the two most important ways to structure a message are the direct approach and the indirect approach. The direct approach follows the old dictum, tell them what you're going to tell them, then tell them what you told them again. Most communication experts agree that the direct approach is preferable in business and organizational settings because of the emphasis on efficiency and the bottom line orientation of most managers. But in addition, the audience prefers a more direct approach in business. Despite the agreement among experts, however, most people in business still tend to communicate in an indirect manner. Now, this is the result of years of training by English teachers who tend to focus on narrative derived from literature, from a reluctance to state one's opinion emphatically for fear that it might actually be understood, and from a lack of strategic thinking. The indirect approach, which means to build your argument or get to the main point last, however, may be appropriate when communicating bad news, or when dealing with analytical or academic types, or when trying to create interest in your audience. Remember that this approach is harder to understand. It certainly takes longer for the audience to process. Several studies have shown that millions of dollars a year are wasted and trying to decipher indirect messages in the organizational community. Thus, you should use the direct approach whenever possible. Managers today have a much greater range of choices when it comes to distribution channels than ever before. Aside from the obvious choices of whether to write or speak, for example, we must also consider new technologies that have dramatically changed the way that we write and speak. Speaking is still the dominant form of communication in business because it allows for two-way communication, two-way interaction. Even in a speech to a large group, the speaker can determine the audience reaction by looking at its non-verbal responses. The choices for managers to include speaking to groups, meetings, conversations with one person, telephone calls, voicemail, video conferences, all of these are plausible approaches to the communicative process. Writing has in the past been a one-way communication activity because of the time involved in waiting for a response. Electronic mail and chat rooms have changed that somewhat, but the nonverbal portion is still missing from the picture. The choices for managers include traditional memos, letters, and reports, as well as email. Writing offers one distinct advantage in that it provides a permanent record for the communication, which can be extremely valuable for legal, historical, and reference purposes. Often, the key strategic choice is deciding whether to communicate at all. Thinking about this can prevent you from communicating something you may later regret. This is particularly true in writing. It's always wise for a manager to consider very carefully, very clearly, very directly, and very distinctly what he is going to put in writing. There are times when any written record, if not carefully thought out, carefully worded, carefully placed, can come back with a very strong sting against the manager who did the writing. Most people have experienced what is known as writer's block when trying to produce important documents for classes in school or for work in business. Most of the time, this results from writers trying to do too many things at once. Many students, for example, under pressure to produce reports in college, will try to develop ideas, organize material, draft, and edit all at the same time. Each part of the process is equally important and takes a different set of skills to succeed. An attempt to do all of these things at the same time is likely to produce frustration. It's best to take these in a step-by-step order, in a step-by-step arrangement, in a step-by-step fashion. Step number one, developing ideas, for example, takes research skills. You might need to go to the library and search for information on the World Wide Web, brainstorm, or interview people to come up with ideas that will help you reach your objective. Most of us would not consider this writing, but it's an important part of the process, the beginning of the process, and the foundation of the process, nonetheless. Step two, once you have the ideas, you then need to organize them into a coherent form. As mentioned earlier, the best approach in business is to use the direct approach. But organization involves more than just the choice between using the direct or the indirect approach in managerial writing. Managerial writers also need to decide how to categorize or bunch the information developed earlier. Now, this is simple for ideas that are easy to put into categories. Usually, however, this is one of the most difficult steps for writers. Impressed by all of the research that he or she has done, the writer will fight valiantly to fit all of the material into the same category. Once the information has been placed into the appropriate categories, you then need to decide which order is best for the categories themselves. For example, you might decide to organize the material chronologically or by some logical method. Chronological organization is easy because one idea flows obviously into the next. But logic is much more difficult to achieve and demands that the writer think of ways to link material through various transitions. Step number three. This part of the process is sometimes referred to as drafting by writing experts. It means actually putting the words physically onto the page or the computer screen. Drafting is the most creative part of the writing process as you struggle to put your stamp on the material. As a result, it should not be mixed with editing, which is a much more logical process that can easily stifle creativity. You should feel free to write sections in any order without thinking about whether the words are spelled correctly or if the punctuation is just right. Step four. Once you have produced a draft, you're ready to go back and edit the material in several different ways. First, you should see if it all fits with your overall communication strategy, whether you should be writing this at all. Next, you should be sure that the material is organized logically with transitions that help bridge the ideas. Third, you should edit to see if the document is easy for busy readers to skim. Finally, you should edit for micro issues such as spelling and grammar. Most writers spend an inordinate amount of time on the last step at the expense of the more important issue of strategy and organization. Although the process might proceed easily from step one to step four as outlined in this discussion, it's more likely to involve movement from one step to the next and back to the other step again. For example, you might find when editing, step four, that your draft, step three, that you need more material, step one. Well, this leads you back to the drafting and organizing, step two, before editing all over again. Writing is recursive and thus involves going over the material again and again in the quest for the very best way to reach your communicative objective. The product is the end result of the writing process. Managerial communication expert Mary Muntner has broken the product into two separate categories, macro writing and micro writing. Macro writing refers to the document as a whole, including its organization, its logic, its flow, and its design. The biggest difference between managerial writing and other kinds of writing, such as fiction or academic writing, is the importance of design or visual appearance. Good document design allows the reader to see your organization more readily through devices such as headings, subheadings, the use of white space, paragraphs, typography, lists, indentations, bullet points, and enumeration. In addition to design, macro writing also refers to the use of effective introductions and conclusions in your documents. An effective introduction tells the reader why you wrote the document and how it is organized. The introduction should also give the reader a context for the information. For example, you might refer the reader back to a conversation that led to the creation of the document so that you can put it into its perspective. The conclusion should either summarize in the longer document or refer the reader to the next step in the communication process. Both of these devices are used to end the document, as well as the logical flow of information within the body of the document, go into the development of effective macro writing. Micro writing refers to issues at the sentence and word level. Most writers have had extensive training in dealing with micro-level issues through composition courses in school, thus they feel more comfortable with their micro-writing. As taught at the top business schools in the United States, however, micro-writing strives to make business writers easier to understand and more conversational by stressing use of the active rather than the passive voice, by stressing the importance of writing short sentences with varied structure, by stressing the importance of brevity and style, and by teaching the importance of avoiding jargon in managerial settings. Managerial writing comes in many different forms. Memos, for example, reports, letters, email messages. These different forms are often referred to and discussed by writing experts. While they certainly differ in terms of the way they look or the style that you might use to produce one versus another, all share the need for good macro and micro writing as well as a clear communication strategy.